Today on Real Ghost Stories Online, we open up the phone lines to take your calls and your real ghost stories.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802. Or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You're about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That it is. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online. Write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. And if you want all the bonus material just to binge away on and some of our best episodes ever, then become an extra podcast person. That's what we call an EPP. You sign up at ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories to get access to all of the material. Tony and Jenny Brewski joining you once again.
Hi.
And how are you this fine day?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing lovely. When it comes to horror-esque movies, what freaks you out more? Is it ghostly type movies? Is it killer movies? Is it animals going nuts movies? What do you find to be the most, I guess, disturbing? And I'm not saying like the jump shock factor of, oh my God, that scared me out of nowhere, but more so the type that linger with you. Is that to me is what a real scary movie is.
I think it's changed over the years. I think now it's actually more like what we talk about, ghost, demon possession, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I can watch psychopaths do things all day long and be fine.
What about fish?
Fish like Jaws?
Yeah.
Jaws is fine.
It doesn't scare you? Doesn't make you not want to go in the ocean or anything?
No.
Like that? I have some of the scariest listed animal horror movies.
Okay.
And I kind of forgot about some of these. Jaws, what word am I looking for here? The spoiler alert, is the number one.
Yeah.
But there are many in this list that I'm kind of surprised by, and some I'm like, oh, I forgot about that one, and some I've never even heard of. But we'll go down some of those in a little bit later on in the show. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost stories with us. Let's go to a caller. Hi. Let's hear your ghost story.
Hi. Yeah. So these stories always start out with, I'm a skeptic. People want you to believe that they're not the type of person who usually believes in the supernatural, that their world is one of like gears and logic and mathematics, a deist universe. But that's not really true for me. And I'm not going to pretend it is for the sake of making the unbelievable or some might say unnatural events of my youth and what happened in that house more palatable. When it comes right down to it, I have to be honest, tell you that I am gifted. I've had many interactions with those who've passed over and other spirits. I inherited it from my mom and she from my grandmother and so on. But when I was young, it terrified me. And while sympathetic, my mother was unwilling to say much about it. She sort of shuns that portion of our lives. My father is a fundamentalist minister, and while we obviously believed in the spirit world, as most Christians do, it was not something you were to interact with or acknowledge if you could help it. To do so was dangerously close to witchcraft. So I mention that for two reasons. The first is that I want you to understand that what I experienced in that house was so far outside the norm of most spirits I encounter that it's left this indelible impression of malevolence and simmering anger on me all these years later. The second is, I want you to understand that I had already had encounters with spirits and was firmly taught not to acknowledge what was happening or to interact. This is important because it was the lack of interaction that tended to anger the entity, and it led to the escalation of the events that transpired and what I feel was ultimately to blame for the frustration that caused it to lash out and do bodily harm on the subsequent inhabitants. When I talk about ghosts or spirits or whatever, it's just the remnants of someone that's passed or some animalistic benign force that doesn't really care. But this was not one of those. So I guess I'm putting this off because it isn't my favorite thing to relive, but it makes it more real somehow to tell the story. So I was there for like 3, almost 4 years in that house. It was a 4-bedroom home. And my parents moved us to when we were, we just started taking on foster kids. And my parents' room was on the main level. And us kids were on the second floor. I say as kids, but like I was a little older. We lived there till I started finished high school. And I want to say things were normal at first, but to be honest, there was always this whisper to that place. When we moved in, the whole house was very empty. But the only decoration left in it was this candle and a crucifix and a portrait of the Sacred Heart of Christ, all within one room. I remember because I thought it was weird because I was, you know, we were raised Protestant and it was very Catholic. But anyway, the room was large, but the ceiling was like low and sloped, and it was maybe 7 or 8 feet high in the middle of the room. And the candle and all that was at the far end in the only window. The door to the room was directly off the bathroom, but it was small. It was only about 5 feet tall. There was a stair down. So it all combined to be just a little claustrophobic in there. Even though area-wise it was the second biggest room in the house, but this was the room that it lived in. I can't say why I know, except that you could feel it in there. I would get up to go to the bathroom at night, and I would feel it behind the door. We lived in Upper Michigan, and my dad was insistent about the need for us to circulate the air in there during the winter. And the door wouldn't stay open, so he took the door off in the winter. And there were so many nights I would go to the bathroom after waiting as long as I could stand, sitting there on the cold porcelain with this like wide open darkness just next to me. And I would just sit there and try and be as fast as I could and just listen. I'm listening for it. Because I listened there in the dark, you could hear it pace. It wanted to be noticed. Like, that was a weird thing. It would wait to be noticed. When we first moved in, it was just like subtle things, whispered voices when you were the only one in the house, footsteps in the darkness, this like insistent hand between your shoulders as you walk down the stairs. And you walk down the stairs, your back would be to the room. But I was taught to ignore these things. But the more we ignored it, the louder it got. After just a few weeks in the house, there started being this knocking at night. And not like knocking on the walls, like knocking on our doors somewhere in the middle of the night, usually like 1:30, somewhere between like 1:30 and 3:30. It was always like dead middle of the night. There would be a knock on our bedroom doors. My mother was the first to say something. And I had heard it a few times, but I'd opened the door to find nothing, and I just thought it was my older brother playing a trick on me, because his room was right next to mine. But my mother thought, she told us that whoever was doing the knocking in the middle of the night better fess up. She thought it was us. So at that time, we were between foster kids, so it was just me and my brother, and we said it wasn't us, and he said he had heard it once, too, but he usually slept with headphones in. So she estimated when it was, and it was the same time there was like that knocking on my door. So she told my brother to take his headphones out for a few nights, and a night or two later it happened again. And I opened my door and I heard my mother open hers downstairs, and my brother opened his just a second later, and like I could hear her downstairs, you know, like the knocking happened to all three of our doors at the same time. So we did this one more time, and all of us opened our doors at the same time, and then my mother told us just not to open our doors for the knocking anymore. If we heard a knock, we were just supposed to ask who was there, and if no one answered, we were supposed to ignore it. And we did. I mean, it didn't stop. there are like three clear knocks in the middle of the night, just like and like it ranged from maybe once or twice a week to once or twice a month. It was frequent enough though that when we had foster kids, they asked, and we had to tell any foster kids we took in not to open their doors at night. We just told them to just go back to sleep. And like, I realize now how absurd that is. Like, it's kind of crazy, but it became background noise. And it was just a peculiarity we weren't supposed to talk about. So we didn't. I started sleeping with headphones on like my brother, and we stopped answering the knocking. But that's when the voices started after the knocking, and it would mimic people. It would, like, I noticed it more than most. We lived there until, like I said, like until I graduated high school, and we took in young foster kids. So my parents, we weren't wealthy, so my parents both worked, and I spent a good bit of my time watching the younger kids. And anyone who's like a parent or watches young kids will tell you, you get used to listening. Quiet kids often mean bad news. So I was frequently the only one in the house with the kids, but it liked to mimic. It would usually mimic my mom, or at least to me, but sometimes it would mimic the foster kids too. Like I would hear my name from downstairs or upstairs or the next room, and then I would realize my mother wasn't around. Like she was at work. I remember once I heard her yell from downstairs, like just after, it was like, you know, it gets dark early up there, up in Michigan. So, I mean, it wasn't too late. It was maybe like 6, but it was after nightfall. And it was just me and Trey, one of our foster kids, in the house. I came out of my room, and he opened his bedroom door. I knew our mother wasn't home, but I heard the yell again. It was her calling my name, but I just felt really weird about it. So I called her cell phone, and she picked up. She was still at work. So she was mad at me for calling her since it wasn't an emergency, but I was freaked out, and I just told Trey to go back to playing in his room. But that night I told my mom what happened when she got home, and she told me it had been happening to her as well. So like a month earlier, my brother and I had walked into the house from the side door, and my mother jumped up and screamed. She wouldn't say why at the time. She just said she was startled. But when I told her about what happened, she told me that the reason was she had just been talking to my brother and I from the bottom of the stairs, just like a minute earlier. She knew we were in our rooms because she had had a conversation with us, except we hadn't been home all day. So this started happening more and more till it was just a given, and we didn't discuss it, and it was just normal. Just sometimes you would hear people who weren't home or things that weren't there. Once I was making dinner in the kitchen, and the window above our sink looked out over the backyard, and I heard Trey upstairs, and so I yelled up to him about dinner. And he answered he was coming, and like he went back to playing in his room, and he was like yelling at his video games. But I walked back to the kitchen, and I looked out the window, and he was outside in the backyard on the trampoline. But I could still hear him upstairs. He was talking. I was watching him through the window, but I was listening to his voice coming from his room. So, but we just ignored it. Ignored it and pray, and that's what we were told to do, and it didn't work.
So what do you do in that situation? And there's a lot of possibilities as to what the hell is going on there.
I would have to tell it to stop and try that. That would be my first thing. I don't know that it would work, but that's what I would have to try first.
It seems like there's a lot of things going on there,
mm-hmm.
especially with the mimicking.
Mm-hmm.
But that with that, I wonder, is that something, or is that some sort of a weird time slip energy type thing going on? We hear about that, like I've been saying a lot lately, of these things where it's almost the living haunting the living and not knowing they're doing it.
Yeah.
Or is that what's going on, or is it something else that's just mimicking the family members in this case?
I would think maybe it is a mimic,
yeah.
Something dark.
Very bizarre. I couldn't imagine that moment where you're like, hey, you know, come on down for dinner here in a little bit, and get a response. Everything's normal, and you look out there in the yard.
And then your stomach drops.
How would you handle that?
I think I'd be freaking out. Pretty sure.
How can me and Harper arrange this so it works?
Really?
A zip line out the window.
You want to mess with me?
No, I don't.
I don't think so.
That would be funny, though, for a moment. Put it on YouTube or something and imagine all the views.
No, it won't.
855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost stories with us. Jurassic Park, the number two movie, as far as animal movies, I don't think that should qualify because, I mean, I guess, you know, I'm thinking it should be current day animals. Currently alive animals, but I
something suppose, that could actually attack you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Don't have a lot of fear of Jurassic Park or dinosaurs. Never have. Not when I was a child. It was just, yeah, they were here once, but no, not really afraid of it coming back. Cujo.
Yeah, Cujo's good.
I think I ever saw Cujo.
It's a pretty boring movie, but it's still terrifying.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, what does Cujo do?
He basically traps this family in their car and they cannot get out.
Is that the whole movie?
Pretty much.
It's just a family trapped in a car with a shitty dog on the outside.
From my memory of it, yes. I was too young to watch it at the age that I watched it.
Mm-hmm.
But I still never felt the same about Beethoven after I saw Cujo. Same dog, St. Bernard.
Kind of ruined it for you?
Mm-hmm.
What about Beethoven second? Did that make it all better? Where you're like, oh.
Well, sure, there's puppies. So why not?
This is the best one ever. How many Beethovens did they make?
Too many. I don't know.
It got to be one of those where it's like, and now in a whole new cast, Beethoven's been adopted for the seventh time.
Yeah, because Beethoven went and turned Cujo and ate his first family.
Beethoven was secretly Cujo. Mm-hmm. That was what it all turned out to be at the end.
Yeah.
They're going to find it out on the new Disney Plus version of it.
Cujo is a Stephen King. You should watch it.
Yeah, I'd like to see that. Rick Moranis is going to be in. He's coming out of retirement.
To do what?
There's a new Honey, I Shrunk the Kids in the works, and I'm not making that up. You're like, bullshit.
I'm excited. I love those.
Because he didn't come back for the new Ghostbusters. He hasn't done anything in like 20-some years. Mm-hmm. He was officially in retirement and refused to come out of it. I'm guessing they offered some insane sum of money and maybe he needed it. I don't know.
Well, sure. Disney has a way of doing that.
Yeah. So it will be back. Harp's ever seen Honey, I Shrunk. Has she?
Yeah, she has. She watched it with me. She's not seen the one where the kid gets big, though.
Honey, I Blew Up the Kid?
Uh-huh.
And then wasn't there like, Honey, I Stepped on the Children? And now they're
dead? No, there was
dead?
Honey, We Shrunk Ourselves, and I never saw that one.
Okay.
But
what's one where the dog eats everybody and it just ends in a really dark way?
I don't know.
Is that not a Disney? That's a bad spinoff? Like a made-for-TV?
Yeah.
Version. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online. Hi, let's hear your story.
Hello. Yes, I have two stories for you. The first is set in rural North Carolina. My family grew up in a log cabin that was built in the 80s. My sister and I slept upstairs in a loft bedroom. There was a loft that overlooked the great room or the living room. My dad traveled a lot for work. So he would leave sometimes, you know, very early in the morning or very late at night on business trips that would last several days. And it was very important to my sister and I to say goodbye to him when he would leave on these business trips. So I remember one night we were sleeping up in the loft bedroom and I woke up and I could see what I thought was my dad standing in the doorway, except for my dad had on a top hat, which he doesn't wear, and was carrying a briefcase and had a long trench coat on. So me being a little girl, you know, maybe 7 years old, I'm afraid my dad is going to leave without saying goodbye. So I jump out of bed and I run out onto the loft and there is no one there. It's completely quiet, pitch black dark, the middle of the night. And I'm frozen with fear because I know that I did not see my dad. But I also know that I did not hallucinate it because I was so anxious about not being able to say goodbye to him when he left on a business trip. And I've always thought about this because I grew up in the home and have never had many other paranormal experiences there, but I'll never forget that because I saw clear as day a tall man with a top hat and a briefcase in a trench coat standing in my doorway. And I always thought that was interesting. I feel very connected to the house because I grew up there. I've never felt scared. I've never really seen any other things there of that nature, but I'll never forget that. My second story is when I was about 19 years old, and I had traveled to Germany to stay with my then fiance, who was in the Air Force. And we moved to a little German town, which was about 30 minutes off of the base of Ramstein. I don't remember how to pronounce it. Anyway, so we're living in this little German town, in this house, this old German house. And I'll never forget, I was there alone for about 12 hours at a time while he was in the military doing 12-hour shifts. And I would clean and I would watch DVDs, and there was a dog there that was with me who I had shipped overseas from America to Germany. Well, one time I was in the kitchen, and I remember the kitchen was on the bottom floor, and in a lot of German homes, most of the floors are tile, right? They don't have carpet. There's not a lot of hardwood. It's mostly tile floors throughout the entirety of the house, and it was the same for this house. So I was in the kitchen doing the dishes, cleaning the kitchen, and I heard the very distinct sound of a heavy chair moving in the room beside me. And I knew this because I am a very neat person. I always have my kitchen chairs on the in the table, you know, tucked in neatly to the table. And I heard it, the chair moved slowly, creaked slowly along this tile floor. And I knew that my dog hadn't done it, and I knew that I was alone in the house. So being in the kitchen, doing the dishes, I was very aware that something had just moved this chair slowly. And I was scared, right? I'm in another country. You know, my fiance is not home. I'm pretty much alone in this house with my dog. So I finished doing the dishes, and I proceed to deep clean the entire kitchen, mostly out of fear, because I did not want to leave the kitchen and see that this chair had moved. So after I'm done cleaning the kitchen, I realize there's nothing else for me to do here. I need to walk out. Sure enough, I walk out of the kitchen, and I see that one of the large, heavy wooden chairs has moved. It is now facing the living room instead of being tucked neatly into the table with the other chairs. So I slowly walk over to the chair. I move it, turn it back into the table, and then I walk over to the couch and sit down next to my dog, who's asleep. I sit down on the couch and I say very clearly and with intention, I say, "Listen, I know that you're here with me. I do not want to be haunted. If you want me to leave, if you want us to leave, I will leave right now. I will get all of my stuff and I will walk to the nearest bus stop and I will leave. Just give me one sign and I'm out of here." And I waited and waited, and nothing ever happened after that. But that will stick with me forever. It was terrifying. And something was there in the house, something strong enough to physically move a solid wood chair slowly across that tile floor. Anyway, I hope you like my story. My stories, there were two of them, but I love your podcast, and it's very helpful for me in my long drives to work. So thank you very much.
Thoughts?
I kind of want to talk about the first one where she saw the man in the top hat with the coats. Like, she saw the hat man and went up to it thinking it was her dad. But it wasn't like a shadow person. So that's kind of interesting.
Which is different.
Yeah.
A lot of times it's the shadow person with the big hat.
Yeah. That's kind of cool.
What did you think it was?
Probably just some sort of ghost.
Just that was a guy, and that's just, you know.
Yeah.
Just misrecognize who it is. Did you ever do that as a kid?
I think I saw somebody that I thought was somebody else.
That, yeah, I guess so.
I'm sure I did. I don't really have any vivid memories of that, though.
I remember being maybe a little bit shorter than Harper, and my parents had like a get-together of people, and running up and thinking I was hugging my dad's leg, and then I looked up and it wasn't my dad. It was just a strange guy in the kitchen.
Like,
I don't know who this is. He's like, "I'm not your dad, son." I'm like, "Oh, okay."
Aww.
I was very embarrassed. Still embarrassed all these years later. Embarrassment sticks with me.
Aww.
When that happens. But yeah, that's the only thing. Anyway, it's not ghostly.
No.
Then I turned around and he was gone. So 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost stories with us. Hi.
Hi, my name's Sarah. This is actually my first time calling. My experience happened a little over 2 years ago. My dad was in a really horrible logging accident. He owns a small logging outfit in Western Maryland with his brothers, and he works on site with the crew every day. He was in an accident. We got a phone call saying, hey, you need to come to the hospital. We got word that he was being life-flighted to like a adjacent hospital about an hour and 15 minutes away from my hometown. So we get over to the hospital that he was life-flighted to and learn that he's in surgery, that he has a ruptured spleen, and the chainsaw, a tree branch fell and hit him from the back and knocked him face forward on his chainsaw, so his face was cut from his forehead down to his upper lip, and that it was really bad. So my family, my brother, my mom, my sister, and all of our extended family were over there in the waiting room. And while we're sitting there, it's getting later in the evening, and I catch a glimpse out of the corner of my eye of what looks like my friend David getting on the elevator. And he was in scrubs. And my friend David wasn't a nurse, but it was so much of a resemblance that I had to do a double take. And he got on the elevator, and that was it. There was no, like, it was just it. And at the time, I was 19, and I just got a new cell phone, so I didn't have his number in my phone, but I just had this overwhelming feeling that I needed to call him. And I brushed it off, because my dad was in surgery and it was life-threatening, and I said, I'll just call him tomorrow. But I still felt that horrible, like, dreading feeling that I just needed to call him, and I just pushed it off. Later on that evening, early into the next morning, around 3 a.m., I get a phone call from my some other people in our friend group. And that phone call is very quick. It says, hey, you need to wake up. David was in a car accident. He died. And the first thing that I think of is that I missed the very last opportunity that I had to ever speak to him. I didn't call him. I didn't reach out to one of my other friends for his phone number. I felt guilty, and it really weighed on my mind for a long time. And as things with the case, the car accident and all of that came out, they couldn't figure out what happened. It was a really horrible accident, obviously, but no one else was involved. But there was no drugs or alcohol in his system, and it was just really bizarre. And the weeks following we went to the funeral and grieved and all of that. Well, I was not sleeping, really emotional, and I just felt a really horrible sense of guilt. And a month after his death, I had the most vivid dream that I have ever had in my life. And I think it was, to this day, I think David came to me in the dream. It was all of our friends who all hung out together, and we were in a field, just hanging out, and David came pulling up in a red truck, and he got out, and everyone was so excited. You could just feel the excitement and the relief. And he walked down the hill, and we walked slowly closer to him, and he was tossing an apple in the air in one hand, and he said, "I just want you to know I'm okay." And I woke up, and I've never had a dream about it since it. And I think that it was him coming to me because we were great friends, and just letting me know that, again, giving me a sense of closure, because no one really knew what happened that night or how the car accident happened.
I have so many questions. First, I wanted to know how her dad turned out, but also, if they ever figured out what happened with the friend and how the car accident happened.
Mm-hmm. I think it's pretty straightforward that what happened there, how he came to her in the dream. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's an interesting thing because in your mind, you could be going, well, is that what I'm needing right now? It's like when your body craves something. It's like yesterday I said, I really wanted shrimp.
Yeah.
And it's like I needed it, something in it or something about it was, I was like, I really, this sounds good. The same can be true, I think, of emotional things too, of I need closure with this. I need this. So one who doesn't believe in ghosts could go down the road of saying, well, you know, you really wanted the closure, so you develop this scenario in your mind. Mm-hmm. To have it. But then you have the cases where there's things that go beyond the dream. Mm-hmm. that point to it being something more. Thoughts?
Well, you can't control what you dream about.
No.
You know, so that's why I think part of the reason ghosts come back in our dreams is because it's not something where we can manifest that.
Mm-hmm.
It happens.
No. Tremors is something that I like to dream about.
Oh, God.
Remember Tremors?
You bring that movie up a lot.
It's number 12 on the list of the...
That's like not even a real thing.
Again, I know. It's like...
The scariest animal? It's not a real thing.
What if it was a real thing?
I don't know.
And that's the thing. You know that Reba McEntire wrote the song Fancy just for the Tremors movie.
I'm sure that's true.
It was all about.
Yeah.
If you listen to the lyrics, it really makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Reba McEntire was in the original Tremors though, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was.
Yeah. I was wondering, just Wikipedia-ing, when's the last? There's a new Tremors movie coming out in 2020.
God. Really?
There's been multiple Tremor movies, like 8 of mm-hmm. them. Over the last, I think there was even a TV series that was in post-production or in production, but never got picked up.
Oh.
So it's been going around it's on its 30th anniversary now. 30 years now it's been since Tremors graced the airwaves.
That was a made-for-TV movie, wasn't it?
Of made-for-television, yeah.
No made-for-TV movie should ever have that kind of lifespan.
They don't do made-for-TV movies anymore, do they?
Now, I take that back. Lonesome Dove. That one will stand the test of time.
That should never have that sort of... Tremors was so much better than Lonesome Dove.
Okay.
I mean, epically better.
Show's over.
I'm kidding, everyone. Well, I take that back. They do made-for-TV movies, but they're like on cable. They're on, you know, Hallmark movie and things.
Yeah.
But what I'm referring to is, do we ever see made-for-TV movies that air on like ABC anymore?
Or CBS.
Or CBS or anything.
I don't know.
I don't know the last time I really watched a network. So, to be completely honest, but yeah, there you go. That's going to wrap up today's program. If you like the show, keep us on the air. Become an extra podcast person, an EPP. You sign up for that at ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. Help keep us on the air and get all the extras. Until next time, for Jenny, I'm Tony. Thanks for listening to Real Ghost Stories Online.